I said it last month, and I'm saying it again. Where is time going?
I don't know.
It just kind of flits away.
It does. Both my husband and son had birthdays this week.
I know.
My daughter's
24th of February for your son.
Yeah,
sons.
You remember. My gosh, what a memory.
That, same as my mom. That's how
that's
I can't
right.
forget.
That's right.
It. That's
yep.
right. So.
And my daughter's next week, and you're the week after.
That's right. She's on the 6th, isn't she?
Yeah, she's on the 6th.
On the day we're celebrating our anniversary
that's
for
right.
the show.
That's right.
That's it. Anyway, we've got a couple of good things on the show this week. We're joined by a lady from Vanda Pharmaceuticals. And if you've heard it on the radio or seen it on television, they're running ads about 24/7 disorder.
I have heard that ad.
And what that has to do with is people who are totally blind or people who have no conception of light. And how it screws up your that internal clock that we have, it actually operates at 24.5 hours, our internal clock. And she explains on how it's so easy to knock that off kilter that it's not even funny. And now, since they've had a modicum of success with the adult version, they're actually starting to do research and develop a registry for children.
Oh, great.
So that may be coming around the bend, and she'll tell us more about that. And then Dr. Wu. You know Dr. Wu?
No.
Dr. Wu is the nutritionist that we've been talking about, I've been talking about over the last 8 weeks or so.
I was thinking of an eye doctor, Dr.
Yeah, no,
Wu.
Yes, no.
The Harvard nutritionist.
Yes, she is going to be, and she was really a cool lady.
Awesome.
And she talks in simpatico with you.
Nice.
When it comes when it comes to eating healthy.
Good.
And the good vegetables that we should have and everything else.
See, I do know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, once in a while.
Once in a while. Wow.
And then you're going to do your segment.
I will.
So it's very foodish
That's
today,
great.
You know.
Nice.
So
get to focus on health.
So without any further ado, even though Tom's
you
Corner will
that.
Be at the end of the, I hate that.
I know.
Do. Yes.
Said it anyway.
Well, I keep saying it anyway. For
I know. It's kind of in my head.
I'm going to stand myself in the hallway for a while.
Go ahead.
But anyway, I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Stick around because we'll be talking about 24/7 disorder.
Every day, PACE is helping more and more people with disabilities take control of their day.
My friends change plans a lot, which was tough because my rides had to be booked a day before. One day, I figured out how easy it was to put my wheelchair onto regular PACE buses. Since then, I haven't missed out on any pickup games. Yesterday, I had 10 rebounds.
Freedom means being able to go wherever I want, when I want. Before, things like missing an ingredient for a recipe or other unexpected errands were a real pain to figure out. Once I learned my service dog Nola was welcome aboard Pace Fix routes, we've been riding ever since.
Hi, I'm Bridget Brown. If you're anything like me, it drives you nuts when you feel like you're missing out on things. Now I make plans in the middle of the day without even thinking twice about it, thanks to the Pace Bus.
When you're ready to take control of your day, visit PaceBus.com or call 847-364-PACE. Pace, connecting communities.
Obviously, if you have been near a television set or a radio within the last couple of years, you've heard testimonials of people who are totally blind and that they have a difficulty with judging day from night. And it is true, because I'll tell you, I am a totally blind person, and it's real easy to get your clock messed up, where day is night, night is day, and you find yourself dozing off in meetings when you shouldn't be, but that's because you kind of mess up that inner clock that we have. But there is a way to correct that, to make you more on an even keel, just to put it in layman's terms, as far as getting the rest when you should be getting the rest. Dr. Marlene Dressman is joining us. She's a PhD. She works for Vanda Pharmaceuticals and works on the clinical side of it. Dr. Dressman, welcome. Nice to have you on the program with us.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
God, I can't remember how long ago it was that we were associated, but when were you doing your clinical testing? How many years ago was that?
Well, we had a registry to begin with, and then we actually ran the clinical studies, and they spanned a couple of years, but we were doing clinical studies as far back as 2010.
Yeah, I kind of figured that, because I remember just taking over a position at the Chicago Lighthouse, and we had one of the representatives come to us, and I'm glad you and I talked off the air about us being able to help out and be part of the whole clinical testing of that. Can we kind of explain how... somebody who's totally blind does get affected by not having the ability to see daylight and nighttime and be able to judge the clock?
Sure. Well, non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder is a circadian rhythm sleep-wake disorder, and it's highly prevalent in people who can't perceive light, like yourself. Everyone has an internal master body clock that controls daily biological rhythms that include the sleep-wake cycle, but also include things like body temperature, mood, cardiovascular function, endocrine function, and metabolism. And this clock, it runs on an average that's slightly longer than 24 hours, and consequently, it's like a watch that needs to be reset every single day. And the way that it's reset every day to stay aligned with a 24-hour environment is through light-dark cues that come through the retina. They're specialized cells that are in the retina of the eye, and they sense the light, and they communicate directly to the brain, to a part of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus.
It's easy for you to say, you know. Go ahead.
Five times fast, though. And that's where the master body clock is, and it needs to be reset every day. So if this master body clock is slightly longer than 24 hours, so if a person doesn't perceive light, then their master body clock just beats at its own pace.
I see.
So they don't have that mechanism to reset it.
That's why a lot of times, even I experience this. Is this the reason why the time that I want to sleep actually moves
exactly
around quite a bit? You know, like within four maybe 6 hours of what I was before.
Yep. So on average, the master body clock beats approximately 24.5 hours.
Okay.
So what that means is not everybody. Some people it could be smaller or larger, but for a person who's a 24.5, that would mean that the time that their body wants to go to sleep and wants to wake up would be delayed every day by approximately a half hour. So in 24 days, you would be 12 hours out of sync. You'd be completely inverted.
Wow.
So that instead of wanting to go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, your body feels like going to bed at 10 a.m. and waking up at 6 p.m.
Sure. You know what? And I've experienced that. I've definitely experienced that, and like I said, you know, earlier, that it sometimes I can see like a 6 hour difference or that sort of thing, or have a tendency to nap more during the day, and I have friends that say, geez, don't you get enough sleep at night? And the point is, it's not that I don't get enough sleep, it's just that the clock says this is when you're supposed to sleep. And not not what conventional wisdom would have you believe.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. What we've learned in looking at the data is that people with non-24, it's not that they have insomnia. What they have is a timing problem. Mm-hmm. If they listen to their bodies, which is not so easy in living in a 24-hour world, they would sleep a normal amount of time. But what happens is, because of jobs, family, or just, you know, wanting to partake in the 24-hour day, they'll force their bodies to sleep at night, and then during the day, their bodies will be wanting to sleep, and they'll have excessive daytime sleeping and even have to take naps. So do you nap when your body wants you to?
Oh, God, I'll fall asleep at the drop of a hat.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of times I attribute it to the fact of when I had worked, I was in broadcasting for many, many years, worked for a major network, and there would be many times where your schedule would change. You know, I was low man on the totem pole when it came to the position I had, so I had to pick up a lot of swing shifts in that. And so I had to get used to sleeping at different times of the day. And I attributed a lot of times the bad sleeping habits that I have because of the fact that I, you know, was adjusting my work schedule, and I figured I had to sleep when I had a chance to get a sleep, and I could stand up sleeping.
Really?
That's the kind of situation that I can find myself in. And if I get bored with the situation, that's it, I'm out.
Well, and I think what your experience is common, unfortunately, because the disease awareness amongst the totally blind, as well as unfortunately the healthcare community, is that there's not a lot of awareness that the people who have no light perception may have these sleep problems, so they often attribute it to other things, like, you know, like you said, your job changed. So what's the biggest problem for you with non-24? What would you say is the hardest part about having non-24?
Well, to be able to function during a regular time, you know, a regular daytime clock, and to, you know, like a lot of times it'll get to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I want to take a nap. Even though, you know, I've gotten up, and a lot of times, too, I'll find myself getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and rip-roaring and ready to go. I always attributed myself to being a morning person, which I was, even when I had sight. But I say, well, it's just a hangover. You do a lifetime of that. You're bound to have your body's clock set to wake up at, you know, an extremely early hour of the day. But I never used to nap like I do now, you know, so... I don't know.
And when did you lose your light perception?
Back around 1997.
Oh, okay.
90s.
And when did you notice the sleep problems in the daytime?
Just recently, believe it or not. Because when I stayed busy most of the time, see, I'm semi-retired. So when I stayed busy most of the time, what happened was I was able to maintain that clock. And then when I decided to do the semi-retirement, the time that I would take off... That's what would mess up the body clock, you know. So
okay.
So and then it didn't help, obviously, that I couldn't tell whether it was day or night. So
yeah,
you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that experience the same thing as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what we've noticed is that when you start talking to people who don't have light perception and describing people describe the disorder and the symptoms. Pretty quickly, people who actually have no light perception say, oh, that's me. I never realized it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially,
until I got started with Vanda and talking about this, you know, when the clinical studies were going on, I wasn't even aware of something like this. I really was not aware of it. And then, you know, it came to the forefront when you guys were doing the clinical testing. And I said, oh, that could be part of my problem, you know. So,
Well, about 50 to 70% of people with no light perception have non-24. So it's very, very common in people with no light perception. That equates to about 65 to 95,000 people in the U.S.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes.
I thought it was, you know, I didn't think it was going to be that much, but again, I'm surprised that it's as low as it is. Can this help somebody who's not, you know, a blind, totally blind person as well?
There is non-24 in the sighted population.
Right.
There are definitely people who have non-24 who are sighted.
Right.
The cause of the non-24 is not as well understood. It's not clear why they have non-24, but it does exist. It's often associated with other mental illness. Mm-hmm. Not always, but it can be. Whereas in the sighted, it's just typically all due to the loss of their light perception.
Sure. I can totally understand that. Now, we're primarily talking about adults, but you said now the... you're doing some clinical research into juveniles as well now, right?
Yes, actually, non-24 can affect any age. It's associated with a loss of light perception. And so there are, you know, congenital disorders that can result in no light perception, for example, retinopathy of prematurity or...
That's what I had,
Right, and so we are studying children. We're doing research in children and adolescents ages 3 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
We're building a registry of patients, very much like the registry that you helped us build for the adult population for our clinical studies. We're building one in pediatric patients, with parents and caregivers. And we're going to be conducting clinical studies next year in the United States, Germany, France, and the UK to investigate a potential treatment for pediatric patients with non-24. There is no approved therapy for non-24 patients. And we're if parents and caregivers would like to learn more about non-24 and potentially participate in these clinical studies, we have the registry website is non24registry.com.
Okay.
non24registry.com.
We'll touch on that again. We don't as we conclude the interview on that. But now the. Looking at the drug, is this primarily what the focus of Vanda is working with the non-24 aspect of the pharmaceutical side?
Vanda has several products, commercialized products. And the space that Vanda's in is central nervous system. So we study disorders primarily of the central nervous system.
Okay. So, and then this was just kind of an offshoot that became part of the part of the arsenal that they have to help people out who are having difficulties in that. I noticed a lot. I was talking to quite a few people over the time that I've done this show, and a lot of it is neurological when it comes to with vision problems and that, because of the importance of vision and how it registers with the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the primary causes of blindness that people with non-24 have are things that would affect the retina.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cells that communicate to that master body clock, they reside in the retina. They're cells, you've heard of rods and cones?
Yes, I have,
well,
yes.
The cells that actually are primarily responsible for regulating the master body clock have another complicated name. They're called intrinsic photoreceptive ganglion cells.
Okay, and you know what? Believe it or not, I've actually heard of that. Because I think our Dr. Fishman here at the Lighthouse is doing some work in that area as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so they were discovered about 15 years ago, and they interact with rods and cones, but what's unique about them is they directly communicate with the master body clock. And if you have an eye disorder that disrupts the retina, so for example, retinopathy of prematurity, as I already mentioned, or congenital glaucoma, or microophthalmia.
AMD?
Later in life, maybe, but not as much. You see that it typically has to be more retina specific.
How about like RP? How about like RP?
Yes, RP.
Okay. Okay.
That is long. It usually has to be bilateral, though.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, the thing is, this the particular drug that we're talking about is good to help people who have this non-24, but it's not for everyone like everything else is, right? What are some of the things that people should be aware of when they go to talk to their ophthalmologist or their eye specialist as far as some of the side effects and that sort of thing?
Well, the doctor would bring up side effects, and I'm not here to talk about any treatments.
Okay,
I'm here to primarily talk about non-24. But as I mentioned early in the discussion, the medical community is not well aware of non-24,
mm-hmm.
which unfortunately can result in a misdiagnosis. Sometimes people who have non-24 have sought out help for their problems, weight problems and sleep.
Sure.
Problems, and unfortunately they've been diagnosed as having insomnia or major depression or other disorders or sleep apnea.
Sure.
And so what's important is that if a person wants to talk to their doctor about non-24, what they should do is they should be very clear about the facts and be very open about their symptoms with a doctor. Typically, diagnosis is made by a person's history of sleep and wakefulness complaints,
mm-hmm.
such as nighttime sleepiness or excessive daytime sleepiness, unwanted napping, like you talked about.
Sure.
In addition, the doctor may ask them to keep a sleep diary to show that they have this irregular interval of sleeping and waking.
Sure.
And it's important to tell the physician. The physician may not know about non-24 and how highly prevalent it is in people with no light perception. And then to provide them links to the websites, which I can give you about non-24, could be helpful to educate their own doctor. They'll really probably have to advocate for themselves because, as I mentioned, not all doctors know about non-24. Although I think the awareness is rising thanks to a lot of efforts of radio stations like you.
Sure. Could it be misdiagnosed? There's another ailment that affects people who are, you know, are sighted, that they can fall asleep at the drop of a hat. I can't think of the name of it. I think it's
narcolepsy.
Narcolepsy, right?
Sure.
Would it be wrong to look to the non-24 medication as a something to work on that, or is that a totally whole different set of substances or drugs used to cure that or to at least keep that under control?
Yeah, narcolepsy is a completely different disorder,
okay.
and non-24 narcolepsy are treated very differently and should be treated very differently. Narcolepsy is often treated with different types of stimulants,
sure,
to help keep people awake. With non-24, it's a circadian rhythm disorder, so if you can get that master body clock aligned,
sure,
then all of the other circadian rhythms will fall into place. And they are not typically misdiagnosed, although there is that overlap of excessive daytime sleepiness. There's very clear diagnostic criteria for both, and a skilled physician, particularly a sleep doctor,
mm-hmm,
would be easily able to diagnose one versus the other.
You know, you just gave the answer to the question I was going to ask you about it being misdiagnosed and that sort of thing. Let's give that information again that you had, if there are parents out there who have children who are who have been diagnosed with ROP, if they can be helped or become part of the clinical study. What is the website again that they would go to?
Sure. It's non24registry.com. That's non24registry.com.
Okay.
Go ahead. And if just in general people want to learn about non24, either for them, for their own purposes, or if they're adults, there is a website that has general information about non24, and that's www.non-24.com.
Okay, terrific. We'll keep both of those on hand if people would like more information about it. And I really appreciate the fact that you took time to talk a little bit about this today, because, like I said, we were there at the early days, and I'm glad to see that it's finally been, you know, it got the approval of the FDA, and it's on its way to helping people that really need the help to get that doggone circadian clock back into shape again, you know? So.
Yes, thank you very much. I really appreciate all the efforts that you've made to help us conduct these clinical studies and raise awareness about the disorder.
We have a doctor here who is our CEO and president, Dr. Janet Slick. And she is, like you, a PhD, does a lot of research and that sort of thing. And I know she's a firm believer in trying to find ways to help make life easier for people who are visually impaired or totally blind. So I think this is good work. And there's so much research being done right now on eye diseases that it almost boggles the mind to see how many different research centers are doing work on so many different things to help so many different eye ailments, that it seems like there was all of a sudden an epiphany and there was an awakening, and these diseases are actually now being able to be managed a lot easier than they were in the past.
Yeah, it is exciting. It's really exciting to understand how important, to me, what was really fascinating is how important the perception of light is,
yeah,
and how important the environment is in regulating our daily functions. So
yeah,
that's what's been really fascinating for me to study this disorder.
It's kind of interesting when you don't know about it, that all of a sudden you get into it, and then it becomes even that more fascinating to you, you know, that you want to,
yeah,
delve deeper into it and find out what's what. Dr. Marlene Dressman, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. She is with Vanda Pharmaceuticals. She works on the clinical side. That's why we were able to talk a little bit more about how the effects of non-24 could be something that you may want to look into. We've got the websites. We'll post those. And if you have any other questions, you can feel. Is there an 800 number, by the way, Dr. Dressman?
Yes, there is. Thank you for asking. The 1-800, it's
1-855-856-2424.
And again, it's 1-855-856-2424. 2424.
Thanks again so much, and I wish you the best of luck with the juvenile part of the clinical testing now as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Our show is The Beacon. We'll be back with more right after this.
Every day, PACE is helping more and more people with disabilities take control of their day.
My friends change plans a lot, which was tough because my rides had to be booked a day before. One day, I figured out how easy it was to put my wheelchair onto regular PACE buses. Since then, I haven't missed out on any pickup games. Yesterday, I had 10 rebounds.
Freedom means being able to go wherever I want, when I want. Before, things like missing an ingredient for a recipe or other unexpected errands were a real pain to figure out. Once I learned my service dog Nola was welcome aboard Pace Fix routes, we've been riding ever since.
Hi, I'm Bridget Brown. If you're anything like me, it drives you nuts when you feel like you're missing out on things. Now I make plans in the middle of the day without even thinking twice about it, thanks to the Pace Bus.
When you're ready to take control of your day, visit PaceBus.com or call 847-364-PACE. Pace, connecting communities.
You know, in the past on our Beacon program, we have talked about nutrition and how important nutrition is when it comes to taking care of your eyes. As we get older, we need more nutrients, we need more vitamins, and a lot of times we don't know where to get them. And through the years that we've been doing this program, we've talked to researchers, we've talked to doctors who have specialized in nutrition, and we thought we'd like to bring you up to date on some of the latest happenings. As a matter of fact, Joanna Wu, who is a graduate student, I think she told me she was in the fourth year of her doctorate program over at Harvard University, and she is specializing in it's food. Well, first of all, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you with us this morning.
Thank you, Scabelle, for inviting me.
You are going into, is it public health that you're going into? Is that where your doctorate's going to be?
Yeah, it's in nutrition epidemiology.
Okay. It's very important for the eyes, and I think it's something that just has become aware of a lot of ophthalmologists and a lot of low vision experts, that how important nutrition is in maintaining the level of sight that you have, and also maybe even retarding some of the diseases that affect people with AMD, with RP, and with different eye conditions. What is the basis of your doctorate? What was the focus of your thesis for that?
The focus of my thesis is to understanding the nutritional determinants of age-related macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm. What have you come up with so far? What kind of conclusions have you come up with so far?
So for this published study, we have looked at the carotenoids.
Mm-hmm.
That includes lutein, zeaxanthin, and alpha-carotene and other common carotenoids.
Mm-hmm.
We found that high intake of bioavailable lutein and zeaxanthin
mm-hmm.
is associated about 40% lower risk of advanced AMD.
Oh, no kidding.
For
really?
Other common carotenoids, especially the alpha-carotene,
mm-hmm.
is maybe also protective.
The most of the time when you talk about, I know it has something to do with the yolk of the egg, correct? Is that what is the most important nutrient that we get from the egg, from the nutrient the yolk of the egg?
I think it's either lutein or zeaxanthin, but
it.
I don't put it on top of my head.
Yeah, that's the one. You mentioned it. That is exactly the
right.
one. You know, and it's quite interesting because you hear different things from different areas of discipline when it comes to medicine and dealing with the human body. Some medical experts are saying, no, you shouldn't have eggs, and you should only have egg whites and everything else. And then you talk to someone when it comes to eye nutrition, and the yolk is an important part of the eye. I guess it's safe to say that if you have everything, but you do it in moderation, it's in everything that we eat, there's something there that the body needs to get out of it in order to maintain its health.
That's a true generous statement, but I think for the protection of macular degeneration,
mm-hmm.
it is advisable to increase your intake of some specific nutrient, especially for lutein and zeaxanthin.
Where would you find?
The study found that your eyes contain lutein and zeaxanthin, and then the level in your eye is dependent on your dietary intake.
Now, would you recommend more of a vegetable-based diet, or is protein equally as important, you know, that we get from meats and legumes and things like that?
So for the protection of AMD, you want to increase your intake of fruits and vegetables because that's where the carotenoid come from.
Okay.
And you should also have a balanced diet, too.
Okay.
That's for general health. And for protein, we generally recommend healthy protein, like protein from legumes, nuts. If you eat meat, maybe chicken, food. And then we try to recommend people to reduce their intake of red meat. Although it's not established, but some studies suggest that high intake of red meat may increase your risk of eye disease.
Will increase the eye disease, red meat? No,
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah, some studies suggest it, but it hasn't been established yet.
I see. Okay, so you're actually safer if you just kind of stay with poultry and with fish.
Poultry, fish, especially, you know, there's a lot of interest with omega-3 fatty acid that is potentially protective for age-related macular degeneration. So fatty fish is very high in omega-3 fatty acid.
Mm-hmm. So when you say that, is it recommended that you have that, or do you have to try and limit it, the omega-3? I always heard that omega-3 was good for you. Okay.
I say it is to increase.
Oh, increase. Okay. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. So what type of vegetables would be would find their place on your plate if you want to make sure that you decrease your opportunity of getting AMD?
In this specific study, because of the amount of food items we can ask through the questionnaires, and we have specifically looked at spinach and carrots and orange juice, and then we find that those food are associated with lower risk of the disease.
Okay. Now, you said orange juice. Would eating the orange itself, the fruit, be as equally as... Okay, it would be. Okay. Because, you know, I got
orange is equally okay, but just that, you know, people tend to drink more orange juice and eat oranges.
Sure.
So our study may not have enough power to detect a significant association.
I
but
see.
But we do see it's in on the protective direction. Oranges. Actually, we recommend people eat oranges if possible because oranges, you know, packed with other nutrients and it's high in fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So it will give you additional health benefits than simply just drinking orange juice.
Right.
But if you're just not, like, eating whole fruits, then we do find that orange juice is protective for advanced macular degeneration.
We, one thing you mentioned is one of my all-time favorite vegetables, believe it or not. I'm probably one of the rare human beings that loves spinach.
Yeah.
And I don't have to have spinach where it's all doctored up and everything else. I mean, I just love spinach, and I could probably eat that every day as a side dish. Because it not only do I like the taste of it, but I understand it's really good for your blood as well as other conditions in the body, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And interestingly, we actually find that cooked spinach seems to be more protective than just raw spinach.
No kidding, really? When you say cooked, now, are you talking boiled or are you talking prepared any other way?
I think our participants just cook it. I think we ask sauté.
Okay.
I think the question we asked how participants prepare it was saute. And I think the reason is being cooking increased the bioavailability of lutein and zeaxanthin.
Oh, no kidding. So it actually releases it to be more effective as part of the diet. If you were to put a plate
together with healthy oil,
It
helps to releasing more carotenoids from the fruits and vegetables. And then, like, I emphasize healthy oils, which are those, like, oils high with polyunsaturated fatty acids. Like, canola oil, soybean oil, but not, like, saturated fat.
How about, I'm trying to think, my co-host of the program, she does a segment that we run, every other week or when we get some good material to share. But she has, it's actually a cute name for the segment. It's called Let Us Turn Up the Beet. Let Us Turn Up the Beet, you know, the vegetables. Anyway, she is a big believer in, I believe it's cotton oil. No, coconut oil. Coconut oil is what she's a big believer in. Is that good for you? Because you hear so many different... You hear contrary studies about one oil is good, and then maybe a 6 or 8 months later you hear that, that one's not good for you. You should be using this one. If you had a prepared food... If you had a prepared food and you wanted to use an oil, what would be the oil you would recommend to use?
I would recommend go with oil high in polyunsaturated fatty acid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are a couple of oils that can be easily accessible. You can get it from grocery store, like canola oil,
okay,
olive oil, soybean oil, vegetable oil. That are the oils that I recommend. And I think there's some decent amount of consensus in the scientific community that those oils are healthy for you.
I see. Okay, good. How about when you get into starches, rice, potatoes, that sort of thing? Is this something that you should... Is there any nutritional value to that?
Yeah, so some research suggested that foods high in glycemic index
mm-hmm.
are actually maybe harmful for your eyes.
Mm.
So, yeah, and then we really want to recommend people to stay away from and try to really reduce the consumption of white rice,
right.
potatoes, because those foods are very high in glycemic index.
Oh, okay.
And replace it with whole grain.
And also, if you had to have a potato, sweet potato, right?
Yeah, sweet potato is high in beta carotene.
Okay.
So if you really have to have a potato, I would say sweet potato.
If you don't like carrots, that could be a good substitute for carrots then too, right?
Yeah, carrots is great.
Okay.
And we do see carrots as protective.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Now, when do you plan on concluding your doctorate and presenting your thesis to the committee?
February 22nd.
Wow, it's just around the corner, huh?
Dissertation date.
Yeah, it's just around the corner for you. So, well, I wish you the best of luck. Go ahead. Is anything you want? Anything else you want to share that I didn't cover?
So the findings is at this point only applies to advanced AMD.
Mm-hmm.
So we those carotenoids in this study we did not find any protective association for people with early or intermediate level of AMD.
I see. Okay, so this is if you've already established the fact that you have AMD and it's progressed a long way. So, well, you know what? If you can retard it from getting any worse than it is, that's a helpful thing right there. I mean, that's half the battle right there. So.
Absolutely.
I wish you the best of luck, Ms. Wu, and please continue the good work, because the more we know about nutrition, the better off we are. I have a fiance that is, she is notorious in watching what I eat and making sure that I eat all the healthy stuff. So now I have to go back and tell her she's right. So, you know how hard that's going to be for me to do? Well,
great.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you taking time to visit with us this morning.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
That is Joanne Wu. She is a fourth-year doctorate student at Harvard University, and she's got some very interesting ideas on nutrition and how to help you keep your eyes healthy.
We have a part two of one of your segments, right?
We sure do. I started a segment last week on our superfood secrets, actually.
Right.
So we're going to wrap that segment up this week.
And we're coming to you with that on our Let Us Turn Up the Beat segment.
Thank you very much. So some of y'all are going to like this one.
Y'all.
Secrets to a long life. Booze in moderation. Of course. Several studies have suggested that small amounts of alcohol, no more than 2 drinks a day for men and 1 drink a day for women, can have heart-healthy benefits. Moderate drinkers do tend to live longer than heavy imbibers or teetotalers.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's kind of obvious,
that,
right?
Actually.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
That, yeah.
And a 2012 Harvard, speaking of Dr. Wu, 2012 Harvard Medical School study also found that moderate drinking may also reduce men's risk of death in the 2 decades following a heart attack.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
But can you get the... Is it because of what's in the... No.
I would imagine... It doesn't have the specifics in the information that I have.
Okay.
I would imagine that there is some sort of antioxidant.
Sure.
Like, I know wine has antioxidants in it that help with heart disease. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up right now. But... up to no more than two drinks a day, though. We're not talking about going hog wild here.
Right.
The other secret to longevity is to not drink at all. So there's that on the other end of the spectrum.
That's me.
Me too. Yeah.
That's it.
If you want first-hand advice on longevity, listen to Tomoji Tanabe. All right?
Who?
He is the world's oldest man in 2007 until his death at 113 years old.
113 years old?
He lived to be 113.
Wow.
And he attributes his longevity to abstinence from alcohol. He also says that miso soup with clams and fried shrimp were, part of his daily
staple.
Part of his daily routine, But he contributes to, he died in 2009 at 113, but in 2007 he did this interview that said abstaining entirely from alcohol was a secret to his long life.
Jeez.
Yeah, so there's a little tidbit. And then in April, 106-year-old Ethel Engstrom, she told the Pasadena Star News that she stays healthy by eating well and drinking about 12 cups of black coffee a day.
Really?
Yes.
Now, that kind of goes contrary to what you've heard.
I know.
Wow.
Absolutely. Although it says you may not need that to cheat death. A 2008 study from researchers at Harvard University found that compared with non-coffee drinkers, women had an 18% lower risk of dying if they drank 2 to 3 cups a day, and 26% lower if they drank 4 to 5 cups a day. Those who drink 6 or more cups a day decreased their risk by 17%.
No kidding.
Yeah, and then a 2012 study by the National Institutes of Health and AARP supports this theory.
But does it have to be black coffee?
It just says black coffee here.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you add a little, I mean, cream isn't great for you. I use non.
You can use non-fat milk.
Right, or non-dairy.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I don't know. I don't know if that affects it at all.
You can
or
use
not.
Your almond milk.
Right.
That you talk about.
So yeah.
Much,
yeah. So. Yeah, and there's another study that says when researchers controlled factors like smoking, drinking, and eating red meat, they found that coffee drinkers, both men and women, tended to live longer.
Wow.
I know.
Interesting.
That's
very
really
good.
Interesting to me as well.
I think so.
Next is chocolate. Eat chocolate. Add a year to your life. Men who ate modest amounts of chocolate up to 3 times a month lived almost a year longer than those who didn't.
Really?
Yeah, another Harvard study. And in 2009, a study in Stockholm, patients who had survived a heart attack were 44% less likely to die over the next 8 years if they ate chocolate up to once a week versus none at all.
Wow,
those are really
interesting statistics.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they really are.
I would certainly question them if they didn't have such credible,
backing
citations,
to them. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly,
yeah, but this is Harvard and the Karolinska Institute of Stockholm.
Karolinska.
Flavonoids, the antioxidant found in cocoa beans, that's what the secret is there.
Sure,
so again, like alcohol, you do it in moderation,
right.
But it seems to be beneficial.
And then?
And then more white meat. Eat more white meat. People who ate mostly white meat, chicken, turkey, and fish seemed to have a slightly lower risk of death during the study than those who ate more red meat or who ate less. And then we've got more nuts, which we've actually talked about before. And another more recent study, again out of Harvard, found that red meat consumption is linked with a greater risk of death from cancer, heart disease, and all causes. Absolutely. I think that's kind of unequivocal at this point.
Right, I think so, yeah.
This study, however, also looked at the benefit of substituting healthy protein sources such as fish, poultry, nuts, and legumes. Of all the swaps studied, the researchers found that trading a serving of beef or pork for one of the nuts could reduce a person's risk of death during middle age by 19%.
Really?
19%.
Wow, that's a big percentage.
Yeah, so just cut down a little bit on your red meat intake, up your white meat intake, or, nuts. I don't eat meat, so nuts or legumes are a good option for me.
Right.
And hey, 19% chance of living longer.
Might as well.
Yep. So we're not eating red meat, but we do want to focus on red produce. So veggies and fruits that have that dark red flavor or that dark red color are a very good mix of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, the red ones can help you stay long, can help you live longer.
Wow.
Best bets, red cabbage to guard against cancer and boost brain health.
Sure.
Beet juice to lower blood pressure and tomatoes to lower... Not a big beets fan.
Oh,
huh?
No. Oh, God, no, it's like eating dirt.
Well, if you put it in a smoothie or something, again, it doesn't have much taste. So you can actually put
I
beets
beg
in
your
smoothie.
Pardon, young lady.
In a smoothie? Have you tried beets in a smoothie?
No, I haven't.
You know what? That would be like somebody saying to me, have you tried mushrooms in a smoothie? So I'm not going to push that one on
okay,
you.
Okay,
I get it. I respect your your beet dislike.
Okay.
And then tomatoes also can help lower cholesterol.
Oh, I love tomatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, I could eat 16 tomatoes a day.
And tomatoes are great, especially picked right off. off the vine. So delicious.
Oh, you know, you take those things, you cut them open.
I know.
You have those. You have
so fresh.
Tomato wedges with hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, is that? Yeah.
Oh, it's yeah. just a
That's
delightful
a good snack.
Meal.
That is a very good
really
for you. See, you know, you're on the right track.
I think so.
I do, too.
I think so.
And then we'll do one more here. Bananas, the world's oldest triathlete. I just like the statistic. The world's oldest triathlete is still going strong at age 91. 91!
No kidding.
He's a triathlete. He recently completed his 41st race. His name is Arthur Gilbert of Somerset, England. And he says he follows a balanced diet of high fruits and vegetables, and bananas are his fave.
There we go back with the high fruits and vegetables.
Exactly.
Again, though, too,
always.
So.
Recurring theme.
That's it. So
that's it.
You know, Lincoln and I have banana every day.
You're going to be, all you have to do is be a triathlete now. You'll live to be 91.
Who, me?
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Tom's Corner. I'm Brian Hawkins with Tom Persky here. And Tom, earlier in the week, you were in Milwaukee for the Blinded Veterans Conference, right?
That's correct. The Blinded Veterans Association, it's their national conference, and it moves around different cities throughout the year-by-year annual conference. And so we were close by. Milwaukee wasn't mm-hmm. too far. But it's an opportunity to meet a lot of blinded veterans from all the states around the country and areas, and also the professionals who serve them. So we had met and got an opportunity to meet and talk to lots of people who serve the veterans. And of course, we here have a VA contract for supplying low vision aids, devices, and lamps, and everything that the veterans might need, sunglasses and white canes. And so we have a nice exhibit booth, which we were modernized, and Luke Scriven and I were able to spend time in the booth all day Tuesday and all day Wednesday last week mm-hmm. in doing that. So it was a great opportunity. It was nice to, we got the highlights of Milwaukee also. So we had the stop at the Mars Cheese Castle, of course, on the way up, which is a Chicago tradition. The Chicagoans love to go up to Wisconsin and stop and get some cheese.
Not enough to become a cheesehead.
And then, of course, along the river, they have a nice river walk there.
Right.
With the bronze Fonz, they call it, which is Fonzie, the statue of Fonzie from Happy Days. And so we saw it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did.
So if you're a person who's a veteran and you need any of those items, you can just call the store or go to the website?
What the veterans do is they contact their local VA hospital
okay.
or what's called a VIST coordinator, visually impaired service team. So each VA hospital has a VIST coordinator who will then meet with a veteran and decide what's the best course of action. If they need a particular device, oftentimes the VA will purchase it for them, and then the VA can choose to where they buy it from. You know, we are one of the vendors for the VA, so they don't call it, the veterans don't call us directly.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Not sure.
But we like
that.
To meet them and mm-hmm. hear about what's new and things like that. But in the exhibit hall, of course, is over 30 different companies representing all kinds of products from around the world. And again, what we've been talking about, devices that are wearable. And boy, there was some more wearable devices that I didn't even know were out there.
What did you find there?
So there was one called Cyber Eyes. And that looked kind of interesting, where a little camera that attaches to the side of your glasses. And the one I was going to talk about today is called Aira. It's spelled A-I-R-A. And Aira is going to be coming out this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a set up a camera system. Actually, right now they're using the Google Glass, which I know isn't going to be around forever. But the Google Glass is mounted just slightly to the side of your temple piece on your glasses. So it's pretty small and easy and lightweight. And this camera, of course, gives a good definition to the signal can be sent to others if you have a, you're carrying a smartphone. And so, for instance, if you were, wanted some assistance, you could open the app that goes along with the IRA, with, like you would for an Uber call. Within 10 or 15 seconds, somebody comes on the app and says, "How can I assist you?" And so you might be able to, in any situation, call for help and turn the camera, whether you're totally blind or low vision, where let's say you're walking down the street and you've got turned around, you're not sure where you are, or let's say you're in the grocery store and you're trying to find the cookie aisle or something like that. Important things that are, you know, the IRA will help with either professional assistance from the company, or you can even have maybe a family member or someone that you designate would be your helper to be able to help you when you are able to open that app. And so the way they do it is they have a service that you purchase. Kind of the basic model would be maybe having family or friends help you, all the way up to a premium model where you get professional service. And then, of course, it's depending on how many minutes per month that you sign up for that kind of assistance. But I could really see, you know, having the ability to do that. So their premium service, their regular service, they're actually dispensing the glasses for free. And so what you're doing, of course, is paying a monthly fee. Mm-hmm. So the nice part about it is you're not, you know, having to purchase a several thousand dollar item you know, like you do in some of these other things that we've talked about recently. So technology is in a different way now is helping visually impaired or blind people by video streaming, you know, through an iPhone, so or an, just any smartphone. And so, you know, we talk about smartphones, and I know seniors, you know, maybe have a difficulty with the idea of technology and smartphones, but this, I think it's another reason for some people who are really want to be more independent, who are on the go, who are mobile, want to be more mobile, to have a smartphone for some of these specific things, or I was talking to somebody who really wanted to use Uber but didn't have a smartphone and lived in a small city where the Uber was would have been perfect for her, but she just didn't have a smartphone yet, and so she was not able to call a phone number or anything because Uber allows a person just to use the app, you know.
Right.
So but for those who don't have a smartphone, one of the things that was a big hit at the conference for us is going to be a new cell phone, feature phone, that's made specifically for the blind called Lucia. And you remember we did a show here on the Odin phone.
Right.
And the Odin phone was very, very well received because it could be used by persons who are totally blind and 100% accessible.
And in the meantime, you're on the road.
We are. Coming up right away, Wednesday in Frankfurt, is our low vision product show. We'll be there at the Frankfurt Township office from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock. So that's an open house. It's free to the public. Come in and meet us and learn about all these technologies as well as independent living aids, what other resources are out there available if you or someone in your family is experiencing vision loss. It's a great community outreach. I know people always tell us they appreciate us coming to their town to be able to sit down and talk with them and show them products. Also, September 8th, we were going to be in Worth in the south suburbs at the private bank location, also from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock that day. And so we're excited to be there. And then we move to the northwest suburbs on September 15th. We're going to be in Arlington Heights at the Wheeling Township offices. And that's a very popular place. We always have a good crowd when we go there. So we show, as I mentioned, technology. We have just a variety now of sunglasses of different types to help people, reducing glare, and lamps. We have some new special types of Luxo lamps that are pretty popular, LED lighting with no heat and no bother, all kinds of new things. So we look forward to be out in the community meeting people.
All right. Yeah. Well, folks, get them while they're hot, the roadshows. And he's Tom Persky. I'm Brian Hawkins. This is The Beacon.
Well, next week, if I can get all the stars to line up and everything else, we'll be doing a live Beacon program.
Cool.
It's going to have a telephone number over at the station, so you can call us and find out what's what. And maybe even if I feel adventurous, I'll let you deal with some internet communications as well.
Are you talking to me or
to you? Yes, to you. No, yeah, because I can't, you know, I mean.
Well, that's true.
This is going to be strictly up your alley.
I wonder if we can have, like, live messaging, like, online. If somebody has a question, they can.
That would be cool.
We'll have to play with that technology.
We'll have to see what we can come up
with.
Yeah. All right, so thanks very much to Dr. Janet Slick, our executive director at the Chicago Lighthouse. Also, Sandra Murillo, associate producer, who is a major contributor to our program. And we'd like to thank Brian Hawkins. Always the consummate professional, Brian Hawkins.
The world's nicest guy.
Absolutely. You are?
My name is Lainey Kleeman.
That's right. That's
yeah.
The flawless.
Oh, please.
The flawless skin over here. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll see you back here, hopefully with a live show for our first anniversary, our eighth anniversary show. I'm Bill Jura.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
We'll see you next week, Saturday morning. Stick around. Mighty House is coming up next.